Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, it's Saturday, and I think we're not here. We didn't get this out this morning, but it is still Saturday, which means that we're doing a
Q&A Saturday, and it's on a Saturday.
That's right. We don't get these down on Saturdays that often, but
it's
this is
very
kind of
exciting.
We pushed to get this because yeah. There's a lot, from what I understand.
Oh my God, there's so much because we're covering the Sermon on the Mount and. Yeah. It's only three chapters, Matthew, Little Maddie, chapters 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
So there's questions about each chapter and then about the sermon as a whole. And then there's, you know, vocabulary and history and shit like that.
Right, right.
There's so much.
There is.
And so I was up really late last night and I was like, I'm not going to get it done, but I need to do it on Saturday so I could sing Q&A Saturday.
And we already said we were going to do it on yesterday's episode. So, we've got to get it out on Saturday.
We got to.
So
it's late, but it's still Saturday and we did it and it's here and I'm so excited.
Right. Yeah. So are you ready to get into this?
I really am. There's a lot, and it's pretty interesting.
Okay. Well, let's do this.
Okie dokie. All right. We are hopping into this Q&A Saturday over the Jesus on the Mount sermon. Right?
Yes, yes.
Little Maddie, chapters 5, 6, and 7.
I mean, you could almost call this Little Jesus.
It's true.
Because this is all Jesus.
But no, but I want to call him Robert Downey Jesus.
Right, right.
RB Jesus.
Yeah, which we found a picture of.
We did. I found it on Discord.
It's on Discord. I shared it on Patreon, too.
Oh, you did. Good, good, yeah. Good. They deserve it.
They do? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you, listener, if you're not in Discord or Patreon, you don't deserve it. Wife is kidding. Because you should at least be hanging out with us on Tuesday nights on our Discord.
No, I agree. You should be there at Discord.
That's what I'm saying.
Discord is awesome, and we need more people to make it more awesome.
I'm not saying that we need your financial support. I'm saying come hang out with us. It's
right.
Fun.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern on Discord.
Some of our favorite people don't give a shit. So.
Yeah. It's true.
Except for their company.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And we enjoy it.
They come hang out with us, and they're like, wait, you're reading the Bible?
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this. So the Sermon on the Mount, right? Chapter 5 is what we're going to start with.
That's generally when you start with the Sermon on the Mount, I would say that's where you start. Yeah.
Let's read where it first says now in verse 1. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountain and sat down.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And I didn't know it at the time.
Why?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, let's talk about the fucking mountain. Okay.
Okay.
He never names the mountain.
Right.
I made a mistake when we were reading this. I think it was in chapter 6, and I was like, Mount Nemo. But then I corrected myself and was like, wait, no, that's the mountain from when he's tempted and the devil's like, do it. Yeah. That was a previous chapter.
That's another mountain.
That's a different mountain.
Yeah. So this is just a mount.
This is just a sermon on the mount. Yeah. But, well, he went up a mountainside.
Oh, okay.
And he sat on it.
Got it.
Okay. Traditionally, Christians associate it with a hill near the Sea of Galilee.
Okay.
Which, that tracks. That's the area, right?
Sure.
But Matthew may also be making a symbolic point about this because Moses received the law on a mountain and Jesus is giving the law on a mountain.
Yeah, that sounds more likely. That it would be symbol.
It doesn't, like, it's less important which mountain it is. Than the fact that it was a mountain at all. And I'm like, but it is important.
Right, right.
Because I want to know.
Yeah.
the sermon itself, these three chapters, may be edited together. Many scholars think that the Sermon on the Mount is not one uninterrupted speech given in one afternoon, but instead it looks like Matthew probably collected many different teachings of Jesus and he organized them into one thematic sermon. Mm. And that tracks better to me.
Okay.
Unless they broke for lunch and then snacksies.
I suppose. I mean, if you just read it straight through, it's not that long of a speech.
It's not that long, but you definitely want to have an intermission.
You think?
I think so. I think so. I mean,
I feel like I would have sat through longer church services than that if, you know, like when I've gone to a church service. So,
but
like,
we read it in three different afternoons.
Yeah. We also commented all the way through it. And that, you know,
it was like 3 hours, 3.5 hours total.
No, it wasn't that long.
If you take the chapters 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Or 5, 6, and 7, I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. No, like our episodes were only like at the most like 45 minutes. And if you cut out like 15 minutes for jabbing at each other and doing whatever we do,
okay,
then that's it's fair. Like an hour and a half.
Okay, that's fair. I forgot we conversed a lot.
Yeah,
and that adds to it.
Right.
All right. If you're just reading it straight through, so all right, he might have done it in one afternoon.
Right.
But there were so many different lessons that he like changed track. He's like, let's talk about a needle, and then he's like, let's talk about a gate. And then he's like, let's talk about a wolf.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, he had to switch topics. And it was only, like, two sentences, and then he would switch a topic.
Jesus had a lot to say, you know?
He did, but it was just so much different stuff.
Right.
Anyway, remember when I said the fact that he sat down? He sat down.
Yeah.
And how that's important?
Sure.
It's weird, right? Like, you're looking at me like,
it's important. I don't know why it's important, but okay.
Because I'm about to tell you.
Yeah, that's okay. What I was waiting
so
for.
Modern speakers stand up, right? Like we stand before an audience, yeah. Right? Ancient Jewish teachers often sat while formally teaching.
Okay.
And so by saying in this formal writing thing mm-hmm. that we have gathered, he sat down. That's not just like a throwaway. It's like, and then he got real.
Okay, so okay. He's teaching now. He's doing the teacher thing.
Yeah, it signals his authority. Formal instruction is happening, and he's in rabbinic teaching mode.
I see.
It's like he put on his teacher hat and said, all right, let's go.
Okay.
And then the class was like in session.
Got it.
Okay, so that matters. All right, so then let's talk about the Beatitudes. And those were from verses 3 to 12. Of okay. chapter 5.
Yeah.
And we were like, the fuck is a fucking beatitude? And
I
it never
was, for
actually
sure.
says in the verses, it doesn't say beatitudes.
Right.
But it said it as a header. Hey, these are the beatitudes. And I'm like, hey, I've heard of those. But these verses are referred to as the beatitudes.
Yeah, what
but
the
it
fuck's
just
the
never
beatitude?
Says it.
Right.
Yeah. The word beatitude comes from the Latin beatus, and it means blessed, fortunate, flourishing, enviable, deeply favored, the good life belongs to. And that makes sense because the Beatitudes are all a series of blessed are the people who, blessed
right.
are the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, bumper stickers.
Yeah, bumper stickers. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemaker.
Yeah.
That's why they're called the Beatitudes because Beatitude means it's the blessed are they's.
Got it.
Okay, that's all it means.
Okay.
It means it's the blessed bumper stickers.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Greek word used is makarios, which doesn't just mean happy, like blessed or happy, in a shallow emotional sense. It instead implies a state of deep well-being or divine favor.
Okay.
So it's not just blessed or happy are the meek. It's these folk are in good divine spirit and favor because.
Okay.
And then it goes on to explain why.
Gotcha.
So that's what beatitude means.
Right.
And I'm like, whatever. Then it goes on to talk about poverty of spirit and God's reaction to poverty of spirit, which is mourning.
Yeah.
And then we get the next step, which is meekness. Okay.
Okay.
And the Greek word is praeus, which can mean gentle, restrained, or controlled strength.
Okay.
Ancient Greek writers could even use related words for a tamed horse, a tamed war horse. So Everything that they did, they would be talking about horses.
Okay.
Okay. All the time, they're like talking about fucking animals and shit.
Right.
So, blessed are the meek doesn't necessarily mean blessed are passive doormats. It means blessed are the people who refuse domination and violence despite having power.
Okay.
Does that make better sense?
Yeah.
Blessed are the war horses who don't just be chomping at the bit and biting all over you. Okay. They have the power to do that. It's kind of like when I clip my cat's nails. She could claw my fucking face off and tear me the fuck up if she wanted to.
Right, right.
But she has divine spirit. Blessed is the meek cat who allows me to clip her nails. And see, she gets better for it.
Mm,
right? Because she holds back.
Right.
So she is divine.
I see. See,
my cat is divine.
That makes sense. She acts like she's divine.
She is. That's one thing that I like in Star Trek Discovery book referred to as Cat as Her Majesty. Like, he always says, she's a queen. She's a queen. And I was like, as well, you should refer to your cat that way.
Right.
Like, that made me really love him.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, then we move on. And we get to verses 13 through 16, where we talk about the salt of the earth and the light of the world.
Okay.
Okay. We had questions about salt. Like, we have a whole episode Q&A about the importance of salt during that. But what does it mean to be, oh, these people are the salt of the earth?
Right.
Like, what does that even mean? That doesn't, like, we had questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So salt, as we talked about in that episode where we talked about the importance of salt.
I only vaguely remember.
But it was a couple years ago, but we did a special deep dive into salt.
I remember making a salt bay reference.
You did. You made a salt bay, and I was so impressed with you. Because you don't do pop culture references, but you knew salt bay, and you knew his arm motion.
Right, yeah.
And that was so impressive.
Right.
I was very sexually attracted to you on that day. Salt, as a reminder, has several important uses in the ancient world.
Mm.
Preserving food, flavoring food, purification, and covenant symbolism in Jewish tradition.
Sure.
Ooh, I just remembered, and one of the things we talked about, they had given such importance in salt that they used to rub their babies in it.
Yeah, I do remember.
There are some old world traditions to this day where doulas or like new moms will still rub salt into the umbilical cord, into their baby's belly button.
Right.
And like medical professionals are like, I really don't want to step on anybody's religious practices, but could we not though?
Right. Cause it's not great.
Because babies can literally die from too much salt.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But what Jesus was talking about, supposedly according to Matthew, in saying that followers of Jesus should be like salt,
mm-hmm.
probably meant preserve what is good, prevent moral decay, bring distinctiveness and value, meaning flavor.
Sure.
And live in a way that affects the world around you positively.
Okay.
So that's what a salt of the earth person is.
Got it.
Somebody who has those qualities.
And that makes a lot of sense given, you know, the context of salt in their time. And
right.
You
know, so. It's just you hear that phrase to this day and people are like, you know, a good guy. But I don't think they know what it means any more than I did.
Sure.
It's just we have this sense that it's, you know, just a good old guy.
Right.
And this helped me understand, no, what it actually means is somebody who's actively good.
Right.
And tasty. And then we had a question of how does salt lose its saltiness?
Okay, yeah.
Because that was one of the verses was about losing its saltiness.
Like, right.
Don't lose your saltiness.
But I mean, that was probably more of a, you know.
As salt loses its saltiness, don't you do that or some shit like that.
Right.
So pure sodium chloride technically doesn't stop being salty.
Okay.
Ancient salt wasn't highly refined, but it was mixed with minerals and impurities.
Okay.
So moisture could leach out the actual salt content, leaving behind useless residue.
Oh.
That looked like salt, but no longer functioned like it.
Oh.
And they would often use it the way we use salt in snowy and icy areas.
Sure.
They would, like, toss it into wet areas so as not to slip.
Got it.
And, like, I don't... People who don't live in snowy or icy areas might not realize that during, like, a winter storm, salt... There's like rocky salt.
Yeah.
That people in Ohio, we buy big bags of it.
Yeah. And trucks drive around throwing it on the ground too.
Right. And like you're supposed to throw it all over your steps and your front sidewalk so that the mailman doesn't like break his ass trying to get to your mailbox.
Right.
Like that was new to me when I moved to Ohio because I lived in hot places. I'd never had snow. And I was like, the fuck, salt? What the fuck are you doing? Like, and it's not the same like table salt. It's
I never really like you think of people in the South never having seen snow, right? Like that's a thing that occurs to you, but it never occurs to me that people wouldn't have known of the practice of throwing salt to get rid of the snow because that's a step further beyond that whole thought process.
And it's so common here that it wouldn't occur to you not to know it, and it wouldn't occur to me to be a thing to ask about.
Now, to be fair, if you come up here now, you might see the trucks not throwing rock salt on the ground. They now throw some sort of like a low radiation spray on the ground. They literally irradiate the snow.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's not my favorite thing that's happened up here. But salt's been really like we've had a couple of winters where it got so bad that we ran out of salt. And so,
well, and I've seen reports, too, that salt use, overuse, has begun to erode our water tables.
Right, but I'm not sure that uranium water is the best way to go.
No, I don't think that that was a good answer. That's like fire, frying pan kind of situation.
Right.
Yeah. So Jesus is using a practical image for his audience that they would recognize when he's talking about be like salt.
Because everybody uses it, knows what it does, and understand the metaphor.
Right, so. Exactly. It was something that was meant to be potent and distinctive, and yet overuse can make it become ineffective.
Sure.
And that was his point.
Well, and salt is not what it used to be to the average person anymore, right? We don't salt our meat to preserve it. We don't use it.
It's not required now.
Right. It's not that we don't, but we don't do that act ourselves. You know, like there are other places that do the preservations of products, and they're preserved in different ways now. And
there's even, you know, people who have to watch their salt intake.
Right.
And that would not have been something even known of during Jesus's time.
Right. And we have freezers now.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. Can salt that loses its saltiness regain its saltiness?
I would say no.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not really. And the whole point was about losing integrity or purpose, not about actual
salt. Not the actual salt, but it works both ways.
It does.
Science or metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, I've been told I'm a little too salty sometimes.
You can be sometimes.
I can be.
Yeah.
I can be. I'm not sorry for it.
Oh, we all know.
Well, it be what it be. So moving on, then, like I had said that this was the bit with the salt and the light.
Yeah.
And one of our questions was, why would anybody put a light under a bowl? And then you made the comment about how our lamps actually, our living room lights actually are kind of like bowls over lights.
Right.
But we were like, okay, whatever. Because we didn't really know what that meant.
Sure.
So, okay, I read two different things about this. Normally, one wouldn't put a bowl over a light, which was kind of Jesus's point. Ancient homes were dark. Oil lamps were valuable and intended to illuminate the light. So putting a light under a bowl would hide the light, smother it, or otherwise defeat the purpose.
Sure.
So the metaphor means don't hide your ethical or spiritual life that you're meant to embody.
Right.
Don't. Your visible goodness should benefit others.
And again, in the time frame, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Well, there was a darker translation that I also came across that I thought was really interesting, which is that somebody who hides their light, like you put your light out at bedtime, right? Mm-hmm. And back then, so it would have been pitch dark, right?
Yeah.
And so they would have put their light out, but hid it, but kept it burning so that they could then skulk around later and steal.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah, that might have
so
been.
So it meant you were possibly not just hiding your light, but like doing nefarious things.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So it kind of had a double meaning. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Hmm. So don't be sneaky and do be bright and happy.
Right.
And let it shine.
Yeah.
This little light of mine. Oh, my God. I bet that's what that song's referencing. I'm going to let it shine. I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
Probably.
This little light of mine.
Or maybe not.
I'm going to let it shine.
Really could be anything.
I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
But I'll let you have it.
Had you heard that?
I have.
Like, that's all the words to it that I know.
Right.
Are there other words to it?
Possibly. There's other... I recently found a song by the Dead South. What is it? Sunshine.
You Are My Sunshine.
You Are My Sunshine. Mm-hmm. And I only knew, like, the first verse, but there's, like... And I don't know if it was always more verses, but the Dead South...
There were always more verses.
Okay. All right. Well, regardless, the Dead South's version of it is...
It
fantastic.
Takes the song in its original lyrical format and gives you the mood that the song always had.
It's
that you didn't know you needed.
The best. It's the best.
Here's where 80s babies come in. And remember, I made reference to the fact that you don't know pop culture references. So in the movie Beaches.
I'm aware of that movie.
Right.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, wait, actually, what? It's fucking not.
Really?
You're thinking of The Beach.
The Beach. Oh.
Wow. And that's not an 80s movie anyway.
Right.
Okay, Beaches had Bette Midler and Barbara Hershey in it.
Okay.
And a very early, Mayim Bialik, she played Blossom.
Okay.
And I probably butchered her name. You're looking at me like I'm nuts, but...
I'm not looking at you like you're nuts. I just don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, 80s babies know what I'm talking about. The movie Beaches. Okay?
Except me.
Right.
And probably a bunch of other people, actually.
Okay. Anyway, in the movie Beaches, Barbara Hershey's character... Like, these two girls are best friends, okay? And Barbara Hershey's character towards the end is dying. And Bette Midler is driving them to the beach. And... she's trying to sing to cheer everybody in the car up.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts singing, You Are My Sunshine. Ah. And then she gets to the second verse and it's killer. And she's like, and she kind of peters off because, yeah, that song is not as cheerful as it lets on.
Right.
So, no, that song always had those verses. Side. You just didn't know them.
Right, right.
And what is that band called?
The Dead South.
The Dead South
yeah.
is like, oh, but we know them.
Yeah, and they did a fantastic
Here's how
job.
The song should be sung, and they did.
Yeah.
It's so good.
They did.
Highly recommend.
Yeah.
Anyway, Beaches, Bette Midler.
Sure.
Okay. It's a great movie. It's where the song Wind Beneath My Wings comes from.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew the song.
That it literally comes from that soundtrack.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Because Cece Bloom is the Bette Midler character, and she's a famous singer in the movie, and she sings it about her best friend.
Okay.
Like, I'm the famous one, but did you ever know that you're my hero? You were the wind beneath my wings. Like, you're the one that actually mattered. You were the reliable one. I was the flake.
Got it.
Yeah, that's what that song is actually about. And it comes from that movie.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, so this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yes.
Okay? All right, let's move on to verses 21 through 22.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus's attitude toward anger, okay? And he's going to interpret the law against murder. Okay, so I'm going to read these two verses.
Murder.
I was just
double checking. Murder. We're talking about murder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like stabby.
I was just double checking.
You know, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, verses 21 and 22 from Matthew chapter 6. Chapter 5. You have heard that it was said to the people. Stop laughing at me. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Hmm. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister, by which it means fellow disciple, will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raka, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fires of hell.
That's crazy to me.
I know. Like,
thought crime.
Thought crime.
You literally, you're a murderer. You can't even be angry at one of your fellow people.
You're a murderer. You're going to hell.
That's crazy.
Okay, I underlined so many different things in that to cover.
Yeah.
Okay? So let's deal with the first part. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Moses.
Yeah. That was an Exodus.
Do not kill, right?
Yeah, it was an Exodus.
Fucking Ten Commandments.
Chapter 20, verses 12 through 17. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land of the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
If you ever need a reminder of any of those, you can just go into any Texas school and find it on the walls.
That is true. That is fucking true.
Sadly.
So I covered this when we went over chapter 5 by itself instead of, like, the Q&A. We were just talking about it a little bit. What the fuck is Raka?
Mm-hmm.
It's an Aramaic term of great contempt. Raka.
Okay.
Like, so when it says anyone who says to their fellow disciple, Raka, right, it's like saying, God damn it, or fuck.
If I went, I mean, if hell was real and then, I mean, like, literally, I think everybody's going to hell then.
Well, yeah.
No one's going to make it through that.
No. It's worse than that, though. It signifies a vain, empty, worthless person with shallow brains, and such expressions at the time were generally punished with a heavy fine. So basically, you would be saying, you worthless piece of shit.
And you got fined for that.
And you got fined. Shit. If I'm coming up to you and I'm saying, you are a worthless piece of shit. I have just said Raka to you.
That's fucking nuts.
And I would get fined because you're not a worthless piece of shit.
Right. But I mean, that it's just that's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm,
you can't. I mean, look, it's no fun when someone calls you a worthless piece of shit. Right. But like, should they get fined for it?
I don't know. Well, it was part of the culture, not just to say you worthless piece of shit, but also to go through a great public motion of correcting bads.
Sure.
Part of, like, outward shaming of each other.
Right.
It was a big show. And that's what Jesus was trying to... That's why all of this is about authenticity and not making a show of it.
Right.
And so it's less about don't say Raka. Like, it's less about the action than the don't be so worked up that you want to call somebody a worthless piece of shit in the first place.
Sure.
So it's supposed to be more about the intent than the action.
I got it.
And so he's saying the rule says don't say to murder people. I'm saying don't get so angry that you even come close to that.
Right, right.
And if you are cussing somebody out, you're starting to come to that line.
Right.
And calm your tits.
Yeah.
That's what the message is.
Sure.
Okay. When it talks about the court, where it says... they're answerable to the court.
Yeah.
That refers to the famous council known among the Jews by the name Sanhedrin, which we talked a little bit about.
Okay.
It was composed of 72 elders, 6 chosen out of each tribe. So you go and you call somebody a worthless piece of shit, and then they're like, I'm taking you to fucking court.
And then so you go and stand in front of those 72 people.
And then you have witnesses that heard you, so you got to pay a penalty for that.
Yeah.
You can't be cussing people out in public.
Right.
The Grand Sanhedrin not only received appeals from the inferior Sanhedrins, but could alone take cognizance of the highest crimes and alone inflict the punishment of stoning.
Hmm.
Yeah. So depending on who you were that said it versus who you were that got called it versus the circumstances surrounding it,
yeah,
these guys got to judge, and they might not judge in your favor.
Okay.
Depending on what was happening.
Yeah.
And worse, they might be like, this is the 10th time you've come before us this month calling somebody a worthless piece of shit. It's time for you to be stoned, my friend.
Right, right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure.
Okay, and then so anyone saying, you fool, that is meaning that applies to anyone that wants to rebel against God, to basically be like, God is dumb and doing wrong on this.
You mean
this.
Like us?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're going around saying, Raka, you fool. Yeah, this term implied among the Jews the highest enormity and most aggravated guilt.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Such an expression was typically punished by cutting out the tongue.
Oh, shit.
And thrusting a hot iron of 10 fingers' breadth into the mouth of the person who used it.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Just imagine.
Look, I'm thankful we live now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
we definitely could not have had this podcast back then.
Oh, well, no, that goes without saying almost. But basically, it's like you're walking up to saying you're a goddamn worthless piece of shit.
Right.
That would have been so bad. Like, you've just combined all of the things into one.
Yeah.
You've said Raka. You've said you fool.
Forget washing your mouth out with soap.
Yeah. Yeah.
They use hot irons.
It was bad. It was not good. Then it went on to talk about in that same verse. Remember, I said that I underlined so many different things just in those verses alone.
Yeah.
This is the last one. Anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fires of hell.
Mm.
This one's so interesting. This harkens back to something we love.
Okay.
The fires of hell should better be translated as the hell of fire.
Okay.
Depending, you know, on the Greek and the Latin, right?
Yeah.
Matthew here is alluding to the valley of the son of Hinnom, which, you know, would be Gehinnom.
Oh.
You know, Gehenna.
The actual Jewish hell.
Yeah. The hell of fire.
Right, right.
This specific, you know, geographic place was near Jerusalem and had been formerly used for those abominable sacrifices in which the idolatrous Jews had caused their children to pass through the fire to Molech.
Yeah.
A particular place in this valley was called Tophet, the fire stove.
Okay.
Remember us talking about like that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
In which some supposed they burnt their children alive to Molech. And we had talked about that way back in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very probable that Matthew means this. If a man charges another with apostasy, meaning going against God and not believing God, not being godlike,
mm-hmm.
from the Jewish religion, so not just about God, but about Judaism as a whole.
Right.
Like, you are not being very Jewish right now, right?
Yeah.
If a man charges another with apostasy from the Jewish religion or rebellion against God and cannot prove his charge, then he is exposed to that punishment, burning alive,
damn.
Which the other must have suffered if the charge had been substantiated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you better be sure you're bringing a...
Don't just accuse somebody of not being Jewish enough.
How do you not have a witch hunt?
Yeah.
This is how.
Exactly. This whole thing can be summarized thus. Someone pisses me off to the point that I slap them in the face and scream, burn in hell, God damn it, you stupid shit for brains.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And instead of figuring out, though, what caused my outburst, society clutches its pearls in shocked indignation, and they then punish me for all of the things that I just didn't say.
Right, right.
So it had its good place, but also the example that I just gave is why it would not work today.
Right. Because generally you're saying those things in reaction to something else that was terrible that everybody missed.
Yeah.
So.
Off topic, but people who are autistic suffer from this greatly because they notice patterns and are more sensitive to social rules, like missing out on the things that everybody else gets. Yeah. And so we will react to things or ask questions that other people don't. And then instead of like looking at the problem, like we pointed out the problem, so we get punished.
Right.
Rather than the problem itself.
Yeah.
So this one, like I had I had a little bit of feelings on it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to verse 27. Still in chapter 5.
Okay.
I'm going to read 27 and 28. You have heard it was said, blah, blah, blah. You shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her heart. Now, I already read that verse that came from Exodus chapter 20. Yeah. But
again, you're committing a sin just by thinking a thing.
Yeah.
Thought crime.
Yeah, exactly. He's saying it's not just the thought crime, though. He's saying, like, you think that just because you abstained that you put yourself in check. Like, you don't get points for not fucking your neighbor's wife.
Right.
If you're still looking out the window at her and watching her.
Right.
And spying on her or looking up her Facebook profile.
Yeah.
And or you made a secret account on Hinge or like whatever you're doing. He's saying, okay, you're checking the box legalistically.
Right.
But you're not actually, like, why don't you get with the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law? The spirit of the law is not just about not cheating on your spouse.
Right.
It's about not being cheaty.
Which I can agree with, but at the same time,
right,
to call it the level of, like, to go to the level of it's a sin that you deserve to burn in hell for eternally for is a... Like, that level of punishment that is indicated through this religion is excessive.
I feel like the people... Okay, the lessons are so simple that I feel like the people had to have been simple. And so he had to, like, make the rules simple.
Right.
Like, maybe I'm reading more into this, but I'm like, these are fucking bumper stickers. And he's talking to a bunch of men.
Yeah.
And men are lusty. And you can't just tell them... don't lust. You have to, like, tell them, and that includes looking out the window, and yes, that includes, you know, this, and yes, that includes, like, I feel like Jesus is, like, being like, come on, y'all, you know what I'm fucking talking about.
Yeah.
But they're making him spell it out, and the more he has to spell it out, the more hardcore and ridiculous it seems, so that then we get a question about, you know, what about porn?
And
there's, you know, pros and cons of that. Like, on the one hand, I don't give a shit if men watch porn. It doesn't impact me one way or the other.
Right.
I'm confident in myself. You could watch porn all day, up one side and down the other, and I'm not jealous. It doesn't matter to me. I don't consider that cheating. But there is such a thing as porn addiction.
Right.
And there is the difference between a person who... actually signs up to be a porn artist versus the sex slave trade that is sold into pornography and children pornography, and that is harmful.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like this whole conversation where Jesus is like, keep your shit together and don't be lusty.
Yeah.
It's kind of not his fault because men suck.
Sure.
Ultimately.
Trying to keep them from ever even entertaining the idea, basically.
Right. He's right. Like, just don't be an asshat. Keep your shit together. Keep your dick in your pants and your eyeballs in your face.
No, and I agree. From a teacher's perspective, I can agree with you. But from the Son of God's perspective, who is speaking the words of God, essentially, because
it's
he is God.
Final.
It's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we talked about it many times. There's a lot of things that he taught through this speech that were good messages, most in my opinion, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But a lot of them also went too far.
Yeah.
A lot of them were too much.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's that whole, you know, you have to spell things out so that people don't do loopholes. But the more that you spell it out, the more harsh you are. And then that makes you a hardcore government and governing factor, instead of the ultimate purpose was just for us to all live in harmony.
Right.
And this is why we can't have nice things, because there's always somebody who, you know, but what about, and then you have to fucking spell it out.
Right.
Assholes. All right. So then we move on to verses 31 and 32, still in chapter 5.
Okay.
It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So I've been married before, so I am guilty of adultery, and you married me, so now you are guilty of adultery. And would you like to talk to my first husband about that?
I wouldn't like to talk to you. No.
Any of my exes. Yeah. So where that whole divorce thing came from was Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 through 4. If a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, and if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, and her second husband dislikes her and writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, or if he dies, then her first husband who divorced her, he ain't allowed to marry her again after she has been defiled. You can't just take her back. She's already been with somebody else after you.
Right, but it sounds like that Jesus strengthened the law here, because it was that you could divorce, you just couldn't remarry after you got divorced, right?
Yeah.
But now he's saying that anybody that remarries that woman afterwards is committing adultery, and she's committing adultery.
Here's the thing, though. This originally was supposed to protect women from being traded out as they aged out. So a man would like marry a 14-year-old, and then, you know, she turns 25 and he's like, oh my God, you're such an old hag. I find you displeasing in my eye. And then he just divorces her because he found her displeasing.
Right.
And so then he marries another 14-year-old. Meanwhile, this is, you know, 10 years later. So now he was 50. Now he's 60, still marrying a 14-year-old.
Yeah. Right?
It was supposed to be to protect women from being discarded so easily.
No, and that aspect of it makes sense, I suppose.
It's a Band-Aid on the bigger problem, which is that women were considered property and could be traded out in the first place.
Right, and the fact that... look.
What if we treated women as people?
The fact that Jesus said these things about strengthening, you know, the punishment, like you can't get remarried or you're committing adultery. You can't, you know, all these things, right? Like, it just kind of solidifies in, specifically with the Son of God, that women are property.
Right.
Like, that's the problematic aspect of this, is that Jesus literally solidified it as a law, almost, that women instead are property.
Instead of addressing the woman problem, right, he looks at all of these fucking lusty-ass men and horn dogs and says, stop trading out your wives.
Right.
Keep the one you got. No. Instead of saying, everybody, divorce your wives right now. You're all single. We're starting over because women are people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the message that should have come through.
It basically goes on to reinforce the fact that this is men's words written by men for men.
Yeah.
And not the word of a God who would fucking know better. The same way that the earth isn't just this one little plot of sand. Women are people, too, and people from other places and other colors and other thoughts are also people.
Well, and more importantly than that, I think that, it's held women down to this day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these ideas that permeate through religion, and not just in Christianity, but in religion in general, have kept women down. Like, women didn't even have the right to vote in the United States until the 20s, right? I think that's correct.
20s or 30s. I mean, pretty Mary sure Poppins was, you know, about women's suffragettes.
Right.
Yes, in England, but
right,
still. These verses are still being litigated in courts today in states that are trying to strip women of being allowed to divorce their husbands.
Yeah, we're regressing so hard right now. It's not even, I mean, like, this is scary.
This is why we are reading the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because these verses are problematic.
We are slipping back into a very theological state of being in this country. And it, to me, that is beyond scary. Like,
thank you, Jesus, for asking men or demanding that men stop trading out their chattel wives. But maybe you could have gone a step further and chastised them for treating their wives as chattel.
Right.
And, you know, as long as we're on the topic, thank you, Supreme Court, for writing in pencil that abortions could kind of be allowed, but maybe you could have gone a step further and fucking codified it into law instead of leaving it in pencil so it could be erased by a drunk ass piece of shit rapist.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate ya.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyways. So then we go on to verse 38 and 39, still in chapter 5.
Okay.
You have heard it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also.
Mm,
and we were like, okay, he's saying don't be vindictive. I can see that, but I can also see you punch me a couple times, I am going to eventually fight back.
Right.
I don't think we're fully getting the message, but let's see what he's drawing from when in the you have heard that it was said. Where did that come from?
Okay.
Exodus chapter 21.
Always Exodus.
Always Exodus. Well, sometimes it was Deuteronomy.
Sure, yeah.
Verses 22 through 25. If people are fighting and hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely or has a miscarriage, but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is a serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm not really sure that the whole... You have heard it here. Like, that was less about vengeance and more about property damage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Property damage, including the loss of a child.
Right.
Because the child was your property.
Yeah.
It also comes from Leviticus chapter 24, though. So let's read that. Verses 17 through 22. Anyone who takes the life of a human being is to be put to death. So murderers get murdered. Anyone who takes the life of someone's animal must take restitution, life for life. So pay a fee. Anyone who injures their neighbor is to be injured in the same manner. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. The one who has inflicted the injury must suffer the same injury. Whoever kills an animal must make restitution, but whoever kills a human being is to be put to death. So murderers get murdered. You are to have the same law for the foreigner and the native born. Okay. I don't care whether it's somebody from here or not. This law applies. I am the Lord your God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Remember when I told you that they were like super performative about their good deeds and their, well, I'm following the law.
Right, right.
And shaming each other into performing. So there was this one thing that I read that said, so let's say a dude is already missing an eye, right?
Yeah.
And somebody comes along and smacks the fuck out of him or stabs him or whatever, and he loses his other eye.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if you did the same thing to the perpetrator, the eye for an eye.
Yeah.
That one guy is not, it's not an equal punishment.
Right, because the one guy's completely blind now.
Right.
And the other guy still has, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the performative thing would have been, now we got to blind both of your eyes.
Sure.
To make it all even out. That's like what they were talking about. Like, on the one hand, I'm like, well, yeah, you blinded the guy for life.
Right.
As well you should be. But then on the other hand, it's like they were taking it to such a degree.
Yeah.
That it was like, whoa, hang on now.
Right.
So Matthew is more likely when he says resist not evil. He's more likely saying instead of like, don't be, wait, what was it? I forgot what it was. If to turn the other cheek kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's saying don't repel one outrage by committing another. And don't just repel the evil, like repel the evil person.
Yeah.
So what the other is, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm assuming what I'm gathering from what you were saying is that basically don't commit an atrocity just because somebody else committed an atrocity.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's exactly where you're going. Well,
I'm reading my notes and like, I think I accidentally hit delete. I was like, a whole couple sentences is missing. And I'm like, what did I mean there? So where it says turn to him also the other cheek.
Yeah.
Rather than avenging yourself, be ready to suffer patiently a repetition
because they're going to get their due in whatever, in the afterlife or whatever.
It's not on you to fix it.
This is part of where they were like, prepping, God'll take care of it.
Prepping for the afterlife
kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is different from some of the teachings in the Old Testament. The Old Testament was very much eye for an eye.
Yeah.
That reading in this speech was much different because he was like, no, you should suffer and let God take care of it.
Yeah. And yeah. Which I have some things to say about that further in.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the second to last thing from chapter 5. Chapter 5 was the longest.
Which I think we might cut this down to like a couple of episodes because
we might. We're already at
basically an hour.
Yeah. Right, I didn't realize I was going to go so long. So, okay. Verse 41. I keep getting my chapters and my verses mixed up. I'm like, we're in Matthew. We're in Matthew chapter 5. So that makes this a verse.
Right.
Verse 41.
Yeah.
If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. There's actually some history in that. And a lot of times people put the, go the extra mile one with the turn the other cheek one.
Yeah.
But they're actually separate.
Okay.
Okay.
I actually didn't know that go the extra mile is from the Bible, but
I didn't either until I was reading this. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's the verse is literally, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds like, that's where the saying go the extra mile comes from.
Right.
And it sounds like it's the same thing as turn the other cheek, but it's not. Go the extra mile comes from Roman military oppression. Roman soldiers could legally force civilians to carry their gear for 1 mile. So go with him 2 miles would have sounded extremely politically shocking.
Okay.
Because, like, if that Roman soldier comes up to you and he's, like, demanding you to go with him the 1 mile, go with him both miles. Just nice him to death, basically.
Yeah.
Give him whatever he's asking for. Don't fight against him. Sure. Just do it. Got it. And do it even more, okay? It's an actual imperial occupation that is happening.
Yeah.
That Jesus is referencing here.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so listeners would have heard this as radical nonviolent resistance.
Right.
And exposing oppressive systems and refusing to be resentful about it.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So he was pulling like a Martin Luther King Jr. kind of, nonviolent resistance.
Yes. Yeah.
Like nice them
to
death.
Let's show them what we really are.
Yes.
Let's show them who we are. Let's show them what we stand for.
Exactly. Exactly. It's one reason that this sermon in particular has inspired pacifist movements through the ages.
Sure.
Which I didn't realize. But that's why you're supposed to give them the extra mile. Like, you're supposed to again, nice them to death.
Right. Just, and that's part of, like, you know, people will always say to show people your faith, not, or to lead, what, I don't know.
Example, and actions are louder than words, which I will reference later on.
Yeah.
Again,
it's kind of that whole, there is an aspect of that in religion that I had heard in the past and probably is still used today, but not like now it is definitely way more performative than it was when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But there used to be a lot of people who very much silently did things to show that they were, you know, to show who they were. And mm-hmm. and I actually kind of lived through, I like that idea. I like that.
Well, I think that that is more of a spiritual and philosophical practice.
Absolutely.
Than a religious one.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's just who you are as a person.
Right.
And you either are that way or you're not. It's not really something you can teach.
No, it's absolutely not. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like either you get it or you don't. Like, are you nice or aren't you?
Right.
Although empathy can be taught, it is just very difficult if you don't already have some somewhere existing.
Right.
Like,
right.
You may not have empathy for certain people or certain causes, right? But you have empathy for something else. So empathy is like a muscle that can be stretched and grown.
Yeah.
To encompass other people and other causes. But you have to have it in the first place.
Right.
And some people are just selfish dicks and are not empathetic.
Yeah.
And they just shrivel up.
Like Trump.
And my ex. So, let's see. Moving on to verse 46. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? So, we had questions about that. Like, what the fuck even does that mean?
Right.
And I did remember that tax collectors were super hated back then.
I mean, generally they are, yeah.
So, but even the tax collectors are loved by their own family, right?
Sure.
So, he's saying it's easy to love the people that you love, but it's much more difficult to love others.
Right.
And, but there's some more history and politics in this as well. So the word that's actually used is publicans, which is tax gatherers. And of these two classes, there were two classes, the superior, who were Romans of the equestrian order, and then the inferior, which is those who were mentioned in the Gospels, which is what we're reading.
Okay.
And those appear to mostly have been the Jews. They were the inferior, which is the story of the Jews, basically.
Sure.
They're always on the bottom in the Bible.
Sure.
In their perspective.
Right, right.
So, this class of men was detestable among the Romans, the Greeks, and the Jews for their intolerable rapacity and avarice.
Okay.
So, the tax gatherers at the bottom were just the absolute fucking worst.
Because they had to be the ones that actually went and said, give me the fucking money.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Well, there were two types of tax collectors. The ones that dealt with the rich, and they were fine.
Well, yeah, because rich people have money to give,
yeah.
Right? Poor people don't have money to
exactly.
give.
Exactly.
And they're sitting... This is the same scenario where if your entire job is to deal with people who don't have money and you got to take money from them,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be a miserable son of a bitch.
You are.
Because, you know, like...
Raka!
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, like, you are dealing with people daily who can't afford to do the thing you're asking them to do, and they're going to get angry at you. And then you're going to see nothing but anger from all these people, mm-hmm. which in turn is going to make you kind of a miserable human being.
No, it's so true.
You know?
It's so true. So they were abhorred in a very special manner by the Jews, to whom the Roman government was odious. Okay.
Okay.
Like, they hated the Roman government, but even more so did the Jews hate their own tax collectors.
Right.
Which you just enumerated reasons why.
Right.
Those individuals were assisted, they were assisting in collecting the Roman tribute and were considered as betrayers of the liberties of their country and abettors of those who enslaved it.
I guess. I mean, but at the same time,
A job's a job. Right.
Yeah. I mean, like somebody was going to have to do it, whether it be one of your own people or whether it be one of the Romans, you know, somewhere else. And at that point, it's going to be at the point of a sword because, you know, like
rather than your, you have to pick your poison, cousin,
right? Like it's not a matter of whether this is like, you should, why should you hate this person? They're saving you from a worse fate by being the one that collects as opposed to the people who are actually oppressing you.
This is the don't hate the messenger, hate the message.
Right.
Or don't hate the message or the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, but you should actually shoot the guy who sent it. Yeah.
I mean, don't shoot anybody, but, you know.
No, but, right. Yeah, exactly. One quotation from an early piece of literature will show in what detestation they were held among the Greeks. I loved this. Theocritus, on being asked which of the wild beasts were the most cruel, answered, "Bears and lions in the mountains and tax gatherers in the city." Like, that joke is still being told to this day in different formats.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, ha ha ha, who's the cruelest creature of them all? And we... Now we say lawyers,
right?
But it could just as easily have been
tax
collectors.
Yeah,
you know, the IRS.
But lawyers are like, because we have some lawyers, not all lawyers. There are many great and good lawyers out there.
But Legal Eagle, I am with you.
But there are many who are, I mean, the short version of we call them ambulance chasers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They seek out opportunities to make money for someone at the expense of somebody else, you know, like, and mm-hmm. they will drain someone dry because of a mistake in their life, you know, and look, that's not to say that there are times when something happens to a person and they deserve that money, right? Because their life was ruined. But probably just as many times where the lawyer took advantage of a situation and wrung the other person dry, you know, and that's why those bad connotations, those bad, you know, ideas about lawyers that we have exist.
Exactly.
So.
All right. So chapter 5 concluded with that whole be perfect. And we were like, just be perfect.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds impossible because
it is.
It is.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The translation on that is real messy. And it probably wasn't exactly like just be perfect.
Okay.
The Greek word used here, teleios, can also mean complete, mature, whole, and fully developed.
Okay.
So the verse doesn't actually mean never make mistakes so much as try to become fully formed in love and mercy. And I think that is such
a much better message.
Yeah. It's still demanding, but it's less absurdly perfectionist.
Yeah.
And it's one that, like, okay, that encapsulates chapter 5. I see where you're going with that.
Sure. And again, like, we commented on this at the time. The overall message wasn't terrible.
Right.
It was a pretty good message. And the things that we're nitpicking are the parts where it gets a little too fire and brimstone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're going to have more things to pick through later with regard to what is going to come up in Paul, mm-hmm. or when Paul's,
I think,
does. I don't even know what the fuck it is, but you know,
he doesn't have a book though. He's
sure. He's just whatever. I don't know anything about Paul, but we've been told that it's a thing, and
his Jesus is different from Matthew's Jesus.
Yeah. This version of Jesus that we're reading right now in Matthew.
Not so bad.
Not so bad and significantly different from the Old Testament God.
He's definitely different from Yahweh.
Right.
I will say that.
Yeah.
And he definitely either adds to or reinterprets Yahweh's messages. And I was told God doesn't change his mind, multiple times, even unto the last decade. I was told this by people.
You were told that, but as we, even as we were reading through the Old Testament, mm-hmm. we saw the fire and brimstone lightning as we went along.
Mm-hmm.
So like it became less as the time frame got closer to Jesus's time.
Mm-hmm.
The hardening of the religion kind of became less. Like, it was not...
Not only that, but there were times that he did change his mind.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Moses talked him out of smiting people.
It's true.
He did fucking change his mind. He changed his mind when he drowned out the planet.
Right. Well, it's because we're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
And people change their minds.
Yes,
they're like, they do. That might be a bit much. And mm-hmm. so they change their God because they can, because
right.
God is just a written down.
Because they can and belief. They realize they should.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll have a God that people believe in where women aren't chattel.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
And people of color.
I don't think we really chattel. Need a God.
No, I don't either.
I don't think we... I think hopefully one day we get to a point where we don't need gods. That would be my hope.
I would like philosophy and nature and science.
Yeah.
You know, how we apply those in a grander circle.
Sure. I mean, philosophy's that's... You could wrap Christianity into philosophy, but...
Well, philosophy is how we should behave and how we might behave and how we do behave.
Right.
And that, I said philosophy rather than spirituality because philosophy is more sociology based, which is a soft science.
Sure. Yeah. Ish. Sociology has a lot of, like, you can measure a lot of sociological things as well. So, like, again, philosophy is one of those things where it's stickier. Like, it's not, you could argue different points of philosophy that mean
sure.
different things. And,
sure.
and there's a lot of arguments that could be had there. I think it
skews into the realm of the arts and literature and that kind of thing. Like right. analyzing literature.
Right. So, I mean, I think the point that I would make is that as long as we're having discussions about mm-hmm. what we believe and don't believe, and as long as we're moving forward with ideas in this world, which doesn't seem to be the case right now, I'll be happier.
But I think when religions allow you to treat each other in cruel fashions and to own other people, your religion sucks. And you absolutely. Can call it what you want, but I'm not here for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're going to wrap this up for today. For probably today. We're going to do the other one probably tomorrow or something like that. But that got a little long on the Matthew chapter 5. So
sorry. So that was Sermon on the Mount recap part 1.
Yeah. And we'll be back next time with
Sermon on the Mount part 2, chapter 6 and probably 7.
Okay. Sounds good.
Little Maddie.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey, wife. I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.